Lawmakers move to impeach the Attorney General. How does the process work in South Dakota? From SDPB, today is Friday, February 26. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, the process of impeachment. We'll talk about what the state legislature can and cannot do regarding removing Attorney General Jason Raunsberg from office. We preview this weekend's performance by the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. If you're thinking about transitioning from your home office back to a regular workspace, consider the impact on your furriest coworkers. Laura Rohde has that story. Eliza Blue explores the season of ashes as we leave behind the polar vortex and wait for the first signs of spring. That's coming later in the hour. But first, crossover day in Pierre. Lee Strubinger is with us to talk about the work left to be done. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. House lawmakers are forming plans for impeachment proceedings into whether Attorney General Jason Raunsberg should be removed from office. SDPB's Lee Strubinger has more.
Republican Speaker of the House Spencer Gosch says he wants to form a committee of 10 representatives to investigate whether the conduct of Raunsberg is an impeachable offense. Earlier this week, Republican Representative Will Mortensen introduced articles of impeachment against the Attorney General. Raunsberg was charged with 3 misdemeanors for a fatal car crash that killed Highmore resident Joe Beaver in September. The impeachment resolution was introduced in the House Wednesday afternoon.
Impeaching Jason Raunsberg, Attorney General of the State of South Dakota, for certain crimes or misdemeanors in office.
Kent Peterson is the majority leader in the House. He says elected officials must be held to a higher standard and that the Attorney General has failed to meet them. He says House lawmakers owe it to the people to bring impeachment articles.
The process is being formalized as we speak, and that will be brought forward next week, and we will take it on as that comes then.
A spokesperson for the Attorney General says Raunsberg does not intend to resign and that the investigation has not impeded his ability to fulfill the duties of the office. Governor Kristi Noem says she called on Raunsberg to resign after reviewing the case and watching 3 hours of interrogation video performed by North Dakota investigators. That video was given to the public. Noem says more information is also being released soon.
These interviews, we specifically asked for the family's consent to do that. So we are going to continue to ask the family what to release, what they're okay with throughout this process.
The House impeachment panel will have the power of subpoena for documents and persons to testify. They will bring a recommendation of whether the House should impeach by March 29th, which is veto day. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
The Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, known as the FLDS, is a polygamous sect. It's had a compound in South Dakota for almost 20 years. The compound went up for sale Thursday, and SDPB's Seth Tupper was there.
The Custer County Sheriff's Office conducted the sale in the lobby of the county courthouse. About 40 people attended. The bidding started at $500,000 and went up from there. A deputy conducted the sale.
We're going to go ahead and sell it for $750,000 to bidder number one.
3 former FLDS members from Utah were the high bidders, but they don't have to pay for the property. They're owed almost $2 million in judgments from a lawsuit they won against the FLDS several years ago. Because nobody bid higher than them, they get the property as partial payment for those judgments. But the sale isn't final yet. The FLDS has a 1-year redemption period to pay off the sale price and keep the property. Patrick Pipkin is one of the winning bidders.
I do want to let people know that this corruption of this church is coming to an end. And we are a part of that side that's helping correct and make a difference here.
The leader of the FLDS, Warren Jeffs, was convicted a decade ago of sexually assaulting girls he took as wives. He's serving life in prison in Texas. The South Dakota compound covers 140 acres in a remote part of the southern Black Hills near Pringle. It has several dorm-like structures, other buildings, gardens, and a guard tower. It's surrounded by fences and berms. Pipkin says he doesn't have plans for the property yet. He headed out to look it over after the sale. There are reportedly 20 FLDS members living in the compound who will have to vacate if the sale is finalized. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Seth Tupper.
For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. We'll talk more about the pending impeachment of Jason Raunsberg in a few moments, but first, yesterday lawmakers marked the annual crossover day in Pierre. SDPB's Lee Strubinger joins us from the Capitol building to explain. Sorry, he's at the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. You're back home for the weekend, Lee. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well.
All right. Tell listeners who don't understand exactly what crossover day, what it is, please.
Sure. So it's kind of this like set in stone deadline that a bill that starts out in the House has to have been heard in a legislative committee and has to have been decided on the House floor and sent over to the Senate by that day. And yeah, essentially that. It's kind of, each chamber had about...
So the bills, yep. Bills that don't make it are dead, and lawmakers wear black in mourning, and then we move on.
Then
right?
We move on, yeah, yeah.
So are there significant bills that didn't make that deadline? Are there surprises to you of what did not cross over?
I wouldn't say any surprises, really. A lot of the like really, contentious legislation had been sort of heard prior or was kind of heard early on, at least on the House side yesterday. And the one that I was watching in particular was the medical marijuana delay that the governor and legislative leadership had called for. They had originally called for a year from when IM-26 would have originally been implemented, which would have been July 1st of this year. They wanted to give the state a full year and implement it on July 1st of next year. They've since scrapped that idea. And earlier this week, they brought an amendment to that bill that says we're just going to study it this summer. And then the way it sounds anyways right now is they'll look at potential legislation or any sort of changes that need to be done to initiate a Measure 26. And then they will sort of fast track any of those bills through the legislative process if need be. And the hopes is to have it implemented in January.
All right, a little bit of a compromise there. So that's one of the pieces of legislation that makes it to the other legislative body. What is the work that remains to be done? Still things like marijuana legislation, appropriations. Tell us a little bit about some of the work that we can expect as we head to the final stretch here.
Sure. So the next 2 weeks are definitely going to be devoted to a lot of those appropriations negotiations. What you saw on the House floor, especially these last 2 days, was a lot of appropriations bills. And those bills, essentially what it was kind of the House saying, here's how we'd like to see some of that money spent. I think one thing that House Majority Leader Kent Peterson has really been pushing for is this $20 million for a bioprocessing facility to help sort of set up and further along some bioprocessing programs with the state's universities. He talked a lot about this week and last week about, the governor's call for the next big thing in South Dakota, and Peterson and some House lawmakers think that this bioprocessing facility will really bring some value-added provisions to some of the state's, agricultural products, whether it's soybeans or even timber.
All right. Lots to look for in the days ahead. Mm-hmm. And then we have this ongoing impeachment of Raunsberg. Is that distracting lawmakers? Are they setting that aside, in a different lane for now? Are you picking up on how their overall tone is with so much work left to be done before the end of session?
I wouldn't say it's impeding their work, but it's definitely something that's hanging over the legislature and something that, everywhere from lawmakers to lobbyists are talking about it. I mean, obviously, this is something that's never happened before in state history. And so it sounds like they're still, as you heard in the newscast, the Speaker of the House is sort of wanting this 10-person committee to take a look at it. and bring recommendations of whether or not the House should impeach by veto day. But then you also heard Kent Peterson say that we'll know more, you know, when next week when the legislature, you know, is still sort of together. I think we're just going to know more about what they're going to do starting next week.
All right. We will check in with you then. Lee Sterbinger, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
You can find all our legislative coverage on our website. That's sdpb.org/news, or you can follow SDPB News on Twitter. Well, later in the hour, helping your dog handle your transition back to a regular office. Up next, more on impeachment. You're listening to In the Moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Listening to In the Moment, I'm Lori Walsh. Last September, while driving home from a political event, South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg struck and killed pedestrian Joe Beaver with his personal vehicle. South Dakotans waited months to see if charges would be filed. Roundsburg continued as Attorney General during the investigation. Well, on February 18th, the Hyde County State's Attorney's Office charged Roundsburg with 3 Class 2 misdemeanors, saying those were the only charges possible under South Dakota state law. But the story doesn't end there, of course. Since that day, Governor Kristi Noem has called for the Attorney General's resignation from office. Leaders from both parties of the state House of Representatives have called for Roundsburg to step down as they introduced 2 articles of impeachment calling for his removal. The Department of Public Safety released 3 hours of interview footage with Roundsburg, and those videos have since been removed from the department's website following an order from a circuit court judge. The content of those videos, however, has been extremely important to how South Dakotans view the case and their attorney general. Joining us today to explain how impeachment works in the state of South Dakota and what exactly lawmakers say Roundsburg should be held accountable for at this point, we are welcoming Professor Mike Card from the University of South Dakota. Professor Card, welcome. Thanks for being here.
I'm pleased to be here. Thank you, Lori.
So let's start with this. Is this totally unprecedented in South Dakota history, the impeachment of a constitutional officer?
It is totally unprecedented in South Dakota to have an article of impeachment introduced into the legislature. There have been a couple other instances where impeachment was spoken about, but it hasn't reached this stage previously. And it makes it challenging because they have no rules of procedure to do this. It happens so infrequently across the United States that in the Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, which is used by almost all state legislatures for their procedures, it isn't even in there. So they're really going to have to develop a set of procedures, and that will probably start on Monday. You know, obviously people are talking about it now.
How long do they have to do this? Like, what they do not have to finish by the end of the legislative session. Tell us a little bit about the timeline here.
Well, the timeline goes that the articles of impeachment have been introduced. They have been referred to the State Affairs Committee. The Speaker Gosch has mentioned that he wishes the appointment of a select committee. So the State Affairs Committee is likely to amend the House resolution that has the articles of impeachment to call for the appointment of that special committee, who will then determine if this is worth bringing to the floor of the House. It will then come to the floor of the House, and a majority of members elect will vote on it. And if the vote is to impeach, then there is a minimum of 20 days for the between the articles of impeachment and the Senate trial. The impeachment has to be served on the accused person, and then the Senate will hold a trial where 2/3 vote is required. Given
All right,
that the
let's
legislature
talk-
is yep.
No, go ahead. Given that the legislature is,
You know, the South Dakota legislature has a constitutional provision specifying that they meet for 40 legislative days, excluding Sundays, holidays, and recess, and that doesn't apply in the case of impeachment.
All right.
So it doesn't have to be over before the end of March. Yeah.
Let's talk about these articles. What's in them? What are lawmakers saying?
Well, there's two specific articles that are considered here. And the first article is that the acts causing the death of Joseph Beaver, and let me take a step back. The governor and other state and judicial officers are subject to impeachment for, quote, drunkenness, crimes, corrupt conduct, or malfeasance or misdemeanor in office. Those are the ways in which someone might, or the reasons for which someone might be impeached. And so when we look at the first one, it is acts causing the death of Joseph Beaver, and it provides a rough accounting of the date, the failure to the charge that Roundsburg failed to operate his vehicle in a safe manner, that he crossed outside his lane and struck a pedestrian. And then the second part is for acts following the death of Joseph Beaver, and those are that following the collision, including during his reporting of the collision and resulting investigation, Roundsburg undertook actions unbecoming the Attorney General, and his statements and actions failed to meet the standard of the Office of the Attorney General. And as such, he must be removed from office for his crimes and misdemeanors.
So how much does the release of the investigative videos, which have now been taken off the Department of Public Safety website, but many people saw them, many people downloaded them or made transcripts of them. So the information is in the public, and lawmakers will have access to that, have already seen it in many cases. How much does sort of watching Jason Roundsburg's conduct during those interviews sort of play into an impeachment process? Can it all be used? Is it fair game in a trial in the Senate?
Well, this is one of the distinctions, is by having the Constitution set this up for the trial by the Senate, it's not necessarily the case that the laws of criminal procedure and the introduction of evidence that would be present in a criminal trial would apply to a trial by the Senate. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that, well, I'm not sure. I would speculate that if I were in that position, I would say that we need the rules of evidence to apply, and I can't get a fair trial, so you shouldn't proceed with this. I would suspect that that would also be a similar claim in perhaps the criminal trial that will take place in circuit court. There are rules that specify what evidence can be introduced, whether a jury can be impaneled to judge. But again, this is a legislative action, not a judicial action, and the power rests with the rules that the House of Representatives sets for the impeachment determination, which is there are sufficient conditions for the Senate to try to remove the Attorney General from office. And then the Senate trial will have its own procedures as to what sort of evidence can be introduced.
Right. And I think that's the key question I'm trying to get at. The House, you know, members have access to certain information, but I could certainly speculate that Attorney General Roundsburg would defend himself in the Senate if there were a trial, saying none of that information that was released should be able to be used because you can't release those You can't release those videos. A judge has said so. So we really have, you know, I think there was a lot of expectation from people, Mike, that the pressure for him to resign coming from all corners of the state would cause him to resign. But because he's not, I think there is some curiosity about how this unfolds if he just continues to assert that he has done nothing wrong.
Well, I don't think he's asserting that he's done nothing wrong. As I understand it, he's asserting that he hasn't committed a crime involved in killing. I don't think he's addressed from what
he is
I
asserting.
Have read.
Yeah, that to be clear, he is asserting that nothing that has transpired is going to impact his ability to serve South Dakota as attorney general. Yeah. Fair enough, yeah.
And yet that is a specific allegation in the articles of impeachment, and that's where your question of what evidence has been introduced is absolutely relevant. Will it impinge upon him receiving a fair trial in the Senate? The Senate may determine that that doesn't matter. We have all the evidence we need. Or they may decide to follow the court systems, the judicial systems, rules of evidence.
Yeah. From a political standpoint, what is at stake for him here? Because clearly he has lost the political support of Governor Noem. He's lost the political support of a lot of people in his party, although probably not all people in his party. I don't think you can say that fairly. But as the procedural things play out, what is the political game here for the Republican Party and for Jason Raunsberg?
Well, I think the supposition from the introduction of the articles is that he has acted in a manner that casts doubt on his ability to fulfill the duties of his office. And that will be one of the determinations that the legislature will make. And it is likely to be a preponderance of the evidence as opposed to truth beyond a reasonable doubt.
Interesting days.
Of justice. Yeah. Well, yes. And if he is impeached by the House to go to a Senate trial, he is forbidden from exercising the duties of his office. So right. He will be, in effect, suspended is the term I think most of us would understand. And if convicted by the Senate, he would be removed from office and Governor Noem would name a replacement.
Yeah.
Which may be convenient because we now have a Republican former U.S. attorney who resigned effective this week.
And that is...
Oh, I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I just completely blanked that. Like, I know that. I was hoping you had it at the tip of your tongue. Sorry. Whoops. Well, yeah, absolutely. Interesting days ahead as we sort of watch this play out and try to, you know, figure the game for Jason Raunsberg from a political standpoint as the legal implications of this and a family and a community grieves, of course. And we want to send our best wishes to those people as we continue to talk about the political future of Jason Raunsberg as well and what this
well,
means
we do.
In the state legislature. Yeah.
Yeah, there are really no winners here. And, you know, the real question is how do we as a state go forward with law enforcement? How do we recognize the wrongs that may have been done to the victim's family and move forward?
Yeah. Dr. Mike Card from the University of South Dakota, thank you so much for being here with us today and helping us sort of untangle the intricate pieces of impeachment in South Dakota. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Delta David Geyer and the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra are ahead for the weekend, and they are ahead for us. You're on Listener Supported, South Dakota Public Broadcasting. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. This weekend, the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra takes you through a musical journey through Central and South America. Joining us today for a preview and perhaps a peek at an upcoming season, Delta David Geyer is the music director and conductor for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Maestro Geyer, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Lori.
All right, a big announcement, first of all, Centennial coming up. Tell us a little bit about that first, please.
Well, I mean, it's a big deal, right? You only turn 100 once. So, we've been talking about this for a couple of years, and then the pandemic hit, and how do you plan a centennial celebration hopefully coming out of a pandemic? So I think we've come up with a really exciting season that celebrates the South Dakota Symphony for its history going back 100 years, the people who founded it when the state of South Dakota was only about 30 years old. These people decided that it was important to invest in the culture and, built an orchestra that is, so much bigger and better than you would expect to find in a place that is the size of Sioux Falls and as isolated as we are, which is why I'm here and our principal players are here. But it's the vision that was behind that. We were celebrating the history of it, also the members of the orchestra, but it's connecting the whole program to Sioux Falls, to South Dakota. If you look over the programs, you'll see that every single one of them has a connection to who we are and who we are becoming, whether it's starting off the season with the music of Grieg, a Norwegian composer, and also a commission from Stephen Yarborough, Sweet South Dakota, a South Dakota composer, or our Lakota Music Project, which is very much of South Dakota, and several other things throughout the season that are very much tied to who we are and who we're becoming.
I'm trying to get my mind around the kind of vision 100 years ago to say in this place, there must be an orchestra. There seems like, band, it seems like, okay, yeah, I could see where they would have had a municipal band, but orchestra seems like particularly forward thinking. What was it like in America 100 years ago in that world? Was that common? Was it rare? What do you know already about that? And I'm sure we'll talk much more, in the season to come about the centennial. But just as a starting point, how visionary was that decision? Or was it something that a lot of communities just, that's what you did?
Well, I think it was particular to the people who settled this part of the country, this whole upper Midwest. And it was the Scandinavian ethic, European ethic. And, I always quip that the Norwegian Lutherans, they love their music, but there's truth there, and they've supported it ever since the orchestra's founding it on the campus of Augustana College as a town and gown symphony, meaning, you had students that played in an orchestra, but also community members. And no one was paid back then. It was simply a community effort, and it evolved through the decades that way.
Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up this weekend as you've pivoted for the pandemic with pandemic precautions in the Great Hall and a partnership with South Dakota Public Broadcasting so people can start experiencing, online symphony concerts. What's ahead this weekend?
Well, so this is part of our Bridging Cultures program, which itself was an outgrowth of the Lakota Music Project. Again, an orchestra that's connected to its community and its region. So we, 15 years ago, started building the Lakota Music Project together with our Lakota and Dakota partners, whether they be tribal elders, cultural leaders, or the musicians themselves. And we've had a very successful development of this project and played it 40 or 50 times on Indian reservations at Crazy Horse and multicultural centers, took it to Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago. So it's become this sort of flagship community engagement program. But out of that, grew the Bridging Cultures program, which is again about celebrating who we are right now and who we're becoming by connecting with the communities within our community. So we've had engagements with Chinese and Arab and all different kinds of cultures, because music is this universal language. It's a unique connector of people. And if you can share with me what you love, then I can understand you better. So, and the bridge goes both ways, right? Like, we can understand each other by the sharing of what we love, and music and food are probably, two of the best ways to get to know one another. So this weekend's concert is all about the Hispanic community, and we have well over 100 years worth of fantastic music that's created from Mexico, Central America, all over South America.
What are some of the things on the program? What are we going to hear?
Well, so we'll hear music from the masters of South America from 100 years ago, composers like Carlos Chavez and Silvestre Revueltas, which are not household names to us in America generally, but they're very important culturally for the development of music and culture in Mexico, for example. We'll have samplings of music from Brazil and Argentina, but we have a Venezuelan composer who's with us, who wrote a violin concerto for his wife. This is Reynaldo Moya. His wife is Francesca Alderig, and she teaches at St. Olaf. He teaches at Augsburg, and so they came. They'll be here with. They have been here with us, rehearsing with us. His violin concerto, which is called Vestida del Mar, Clothes in the Sea. And it has very much to do with him growing up in Venezuela and his connection to the ocean. Beautiful, beautiful piece of music, also folkloric in some elements. So much of this music is infused with dance rhythms and things that we would, instantly recognize as being, celebratory music or folkloric music.
Yeah. What is it like in the hall right now with, people, at a distance, the musicians taking precautions? What is that experience like? It has to be memorable for you, to say the least.
yeah, not necessarily all positive. We'll definitely remember this time. So finding a space to rehearse is a problem when everybody is distanced in the orchestra 6 feet apart. So normally, violinists share a stand, for instance, two violins, two cellos on a stand. Everybody has their own stand. They're all separated. So it's very difficult to hear one another. Rehearsing takes much more effort. It takes longer. And because we can't get into the hall until the day of the performance, we had to search around because we can't fit into the places that we would normally rehearse, even with a smaller orchestra with that kind of distance. So we've been rehearsing at Our Savior's Lutheran Church, not in their sanctuary, but in their worship center, because it's a huge space, and we can spread out in there. But acoustically, that space was built for amplified music, praise band music, that sort of thing. So,
right.
So it's actually quite difficult to hear, but it's safe. So that's what we do, and you have to make those adjustments.
You're ready to come back to a new better, if not a new normal, maybe.
Well, we all are, right? We all have. Yeah. We all have pandemic fatigue.
Yeah, but I guess
I'm sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
And this is why I'm asking is because it has been important enough to these musicians, to these audience members, to South Dakota Public Broadcasting, to you, to keep this going and to say this is essential and this matters, that even when it is far less than ideal, we know that we can create something memorable and meaningful and impactful for people who are going through a really difficult time. And can you just in a minute tell me the days that have been the hardest, have there also, as we're looking at 1 year now coming up here soon of the pandemic in South Dakota, when have been those moments for you that you've just said, well, but it's worth it?
Well, I mean, all of the canceled concerts last spring and then reimagining the whole season over the summer, it's like really important questions. Like what do people need to hear? Like we have to reconfigure this entire next season, beginning last October. So what is it when people come back to the wall, what do they need to hear? And we chose Bach, you know, because in Bach was encapsulated all the pain, all of the joy of coming back together, but also giving us pause, giving us a moment for reflection over the trauma, what we've experienced. You know, this is the healing power of music.
Well, it's a musical journey through Central and South America. It is this Saturday, February 25th at 7:30 at the Washington Pavilion in downtown Sioux Falls. You can find more information on the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra on their Facebook page at sdsymphony.org. And of course, you can also watch the show from the comfort of your living room as you stream in through the partnership with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Maestro Delta David Geyer, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I should also mention that there's an open dress rehearsal at 1:00 on Saturday.
1:00 on
so that's another option for people who might want a little more social distancing.
More than 130,000 COVID-19 vaccines have now been administered in the state of South Dakota. The South Dakota Department of Health says 7,000 doses of the newly approved Johnson & Johnson vaccine are scheduled to boost the state's numbers even further next week. Well, although many South Dakotans still have months to wait before optimum immunity to SARS-CoV-2, you might be thinking right now about the transition out of a home office and back to work. The next big change might also impact your dog. A canine behavioral specialist says dog owners working from home need to take steps today to ensure their furry friends don't feel left behind when they return to their offices. SDPB's Laura Rohde has this story.
Amy, kennel. Kennel. Amy, kennel. Good puppies. Good job.
Before she hops on a work Zoom, operations manager Jeannie Strutz makes sure Amy, Joe, and Gus are comfortable. Although the family's black lab and Australian heeler don't spend as many hours in their crates today as they did when she left home to work, Strutz continues to make crate time part of their daily routines.
You know, I'd love to let them lay by my feet and stuff like that all day, but it's better for them to continue on down their path of consistency. Them being familiar with their crate, being familiar with, you know, a schedule, not letting them get away with everything.
Officing from home for nearly a year now, Strutz says at first the routine change was confusing for her furry family members.
And they weren't really sure, like, why is she closing the door on us? And why is she making us, you know, stay away from her because I had meetings or whatever and didn't want any interruptions? And so it took a little bit for them to understand that, you know, if the door is closed, then they need to kind of keep quiet and stuff. So definitely a routine change for them, thinking that, you know, I'm home, we can do all kinds of things, to, okay, mom says no, we have to be quiet.
And although she doesn't know when she will return to work, Strutz wants to make sure when that time comes, the routine shift doesn't create anxiety for Amy, Joe, and Gus.
If we are going to go back into the office, we do need to prepare everyone, because I think many people have become very attached to their pets and vice versa, their pets attached to them.
Trainer and canine behaviorist for Paws Pet Resort, Sammy Jo Menning, agrees. She encourages pet owners not to delay and to begin preparing their canine right away for the day they return to the office.
I would say start preparing now, like if they, you know, have been home. This is something I've told my clients, you know, from the day that they went to working at home is, you know, have some time where it's not just you and your dog 24/7 with each other. And because that can lead right into separation anxiety when you do go back to not having to be with your dog 24/7. So just some designated times where your dog is still being able to be independent and calm and confident.
To set your dogs up for success, Menning suggests introducing extended amounts of crate time into their daily routine.
Making sure that their days look similar so that the day that you go back, you're not worrying about how your dog's going to adjust being at home for 8 hours by themselves. Making them, you know, be in their crate for significant times throughout the day, like instead of, you know, 30 minutes, maybe working up to 3 to 4 hours of, you know, being in their crate time, just so that when you go back, it's not such a sudden change.
When Menning talks about a crate, she is referencing a kennel that is large enough for the dog to stand up and turn around in. She explains that a dog's crate is a space where they feel comfortable and safe. It's a space where they can relax. She shares some crate training tips that she uses with her 4 canine kids, Tex, Blue, Raymond, and Lola.
They get fed in their crate. I also have a multiple dog household, so that's what worked easiest for me. So doing some training, some crate games, going in and out of the crate for rewards, making it a fun command. So just building your reward history and letting them know that they can use the crate when people are home, when people are away, when company's over. It's not just a you go in the crate when people leave. It's a very normal part of the routine.
Sammy Jo Menning also suggests exercising dogs before crate time and providing them with a few toys to entertain them, like a peanut butter stuffed Kong. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Laura Rohde.
Mike and Doug Tubbles have been performing music in the Black Hills for more than a decade. You can see them, along with their cousin Reed Tubbles, as they make up the Wake Singers. They're performing Sunday evening at Hesapa Enterprises. That's at 406 5th Street in Rapid City. There is a slight chance of snow in the west overnight, but events should go uninterrupted in the Black Hills this weekend, with highs in the 40s today and tomorrow. That includes the 9th annual Polar Bear Chili Cook-Off, which takes place tomorrow. Sample chili from a record-breaking number of 25 competitors in downtown Hill City. That kicks off at 11 a.m. Winds are increasing central to east with some snow developing Saturday evening. Central South Dakota, you should see highs in the 40s as you make plans to visit the KCC Farm Home and Sports Show at the Ramcota. That's in Pier this Saturday and Sunday. Got a wind advisory for portions of far northeastern and east central South Dakota until about 1 p.m. today. Partly sunny in the southeast tomorrow with a slight chance of some afternoon rain. So pack an umbrella if you plan to walk to the GPAC men's basketball semifinal at the Corn Palace between Mount Marty and Dakota Wesleyan. Tip-off time, 3 p.m. For the northeast, increasing clouds with a 50% chance of snow by tomorrow. Areas south of Watertown could see snow accumulations of 2 inches. In Watertown, Big Red Rocket Riot heats up the Goss Opera House, 50s rock and rockabilly to old school country and twang. That's the sound of the Big Red Rocket Riot. And they take the stage at 9 p.m. tonight. It is a mixed bag of weather across the state for the next 3 days, so keep an eye on the forecast for changes and have a great weekend. Eliza Blue examines the weather, what it means to her state of mind, as we journey along the end of winter and wait for a not yet seen spring. You're in the moment. This is South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Listening to In the Moment on SDPB. Well, we mostly survived the recent polar vortex, but we have not yet seen the first real signs of a coming spring. The end of February is an in-between time. Here's Eliza Blue's February postcard from the prairie.
I sit down to write with a nubby afghan draped around my shoulders. The deep cold of last week's polar vortex has passed. The nights of worrying about double-digit negative temperatures over, hopefully, for a while. Other than a few chickens with frostbitten combs, all the creatures under our care came through the dangerous cold unharmed. And when the temperature climbed out of negative numbers for the first time in a week, it felt momentarily like spring. Until, ensconced in my chilly writing closet, an ancient space heater roaring at full blast, I remembered 10-plus degrees is still very, very cold. Spring in western Dakota is a long way off. The temperature is not the only reason I feel chilled. It's Ash Wednesday, the first day of Lent in the Christian tradition, and it's also the 20th anniversary of my father's sudden death. Living and working in New York City, attempting my first foray into adulthood, the call came at dawn, my mother's weeping voice breaking the news. I flew home for the funeral, but the ground was too frozen to bury him. "What will they do with his body?" I asked. No one knew for sure. It was the beginning of a Lent that would last for years. A decade later, I found myself in South Dakota. Avenues swirling with human activity replaced by wind-soaked grass and the slow dance of ruminants grazing. I tell people who incredulously ask how I've ended up here that of all the places I've lived, Manhattan and South Dakota are the most similar. They never believe me, but whether lost in a river of bodies at rush hour or an ocean of grass in late spring, the scale is the same. The magnitude a reminder of my own minuteness. I heard recently that we have become a ritual poor people. Most of our holidays revolve around consumerism rather than connection. The roadmap through grief truncated into cliches that alienate as much as they comfort those who are grieving. Sometimes it seems we've forgotten that the journey through the valley of the shadow of death does not follow a straight or clear path. It is a wilderness. This winter feels more like Lent than usual. It's already been a year of ashes. But traditions like Lent offer an opportunity to practice walking through the wilderness while in community. We don't have to do it alone. When Lent ends, there will be a celebration of rebirth, of resurrection, of spring and new life. But for now, it's okay to recognize that darkness still encircles us, that the earth still slumbers frozen beneath our feet, that the seeds are stirring but have not yet sprung forth. For now, it's okay to dwell in the gathering twilight of early evening and remember, from ashes we are born and to ashes we shall return. It will be spring soon, but it's not spring yet. In less than a month, we begin calving. Acting as midwife for livestock is a grueling round-the-clock job. It is the time of birth, new life, exuberance, and exhaustion, but it is also a time of death. Whether it's because of birth defects or troubles during labor, some of the babies born don't live long. They become part of whatever grows next. The blades of grass that feed the other lambs and calves, the leaves of the towering ash trees, the thicket of brush where a doe hides her fawn. I shrug off the afghan. The wind's picked up, and it's rattling the panes of the south-facing windows. It's a Chinook wind. The weather's changing again. By week's end, my kids will run across the yard in sweaters. It will be too cold to leave off coats, but I'll let them anyway, so they can remember how it feels to move unencumbered by layers of heavy polyester and wood. And when they return to the house later, red-cheeked and shouting, telling me they are cold, too cold, but laughing as they say it, I will smile, lift them into the warmth of my arms, and remember how it feels to run unencumbered, too.
You can find more from Eliza Blue at elizablue.net. And now it's time for poetry this Friday. Here is Patrick Hicks with poetry from Studio 47.
This is poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Hyde Erdrich. Erdrich was born on November 26, 1963, in Breckenridge, Minnesota, and she grew up in Wahpeton, North Dakota. Her father and mother taught at a Bureau of Indian Affairs boarding school, and she is an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Ojibwa. After high school, Erdrich attended Dartmouth and graduated with a BA in Literature and Creative Writing. She then went to Johns Hopkins, where she received two MAs in quick succession, one in poetry and another in fiction. She earned a PhD from the Union Institute. Aside from being a writer, she is also a visual arts curator. Along with her sister, the critically and popularly acclaimed novelist Louise Erdrich, they founded Birch Bark House, which is an organization designed to support indigenous languages. Erdrich also directs Wigwas Press, which publishes books in Ojibwa. Her books include Maria Tallchief, Fishing for Myth, The Mother's Tongue, National Monuments, Original Local, Indigenous Food Stories and Recipes from the Upper Midwest, Curator of Ephemera, and Little Big Bully. Erdrich has won the Minnesota Book Award, a National Poetry Series Award, and she has received fellowships from the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Loft Literary Center, the First Peoples Fund, and the Archibald Bush Foundation. She teaches at Augsburg University in their MFA program. Today's poem is Stung. There is a mournfulness about this poem that I very much appreciate. There is also a reminder of our relationship with nature, how casual we can be, and how we can cause harm to other living things without realizing it. Rather than explain more, I think it's wise just to let this powerful poem unfurl before you. This is Stung by Hyde Erdrich. She couldn't help but sting my finger, clinging a moment before I flung her to the ground. Her gold is true, not the trick evening light plays on my roses. She curls into herself, stinger twitching, gilt wings folded, her whole life just a few weeks, and my pain subsided in a moment. In the cold, she hardly had her wits to buzz, no warning from either of us, she sleeping in the richness of those petals, then the hand, my hand, cupping the bloom in devastating force, crushing the petals for the scent, and she mortally threatened, wholly unaware that I do this daily, alone with the gold last light, in what seems to me an act of love.
Poetry from Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks. This episode was recorded remotely due to the coronavirus pandemic and produced by Peter Folliard. We both send our best wishes. Thank you for listening.
If you like that poem, you can find our interviews with Hyde and her reading poetry of her own on our website at listen.sdpb.org. Search the keyword poetry. You can also find more poetry from Studio 47 in the same way, or you can go directly to their website at ps47.org. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. You can find all our stories and today's show notes online at sdpb.org/news. Find videos on our YouTube channel. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram, I'm at SDPBInTheMoment. On Twitter, at MomentSDPB. You can also send us your stories and ideas via email inthemoment@sdpb.org. For Steve Zwemke, Josh Heyer, and Chris Loffrey, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.